All right, everybody, welcome back to the Game Trail Podcast. I missed you last week, but I'm back. I'm actually down here in Vegas for a few days for work. Recorded some other podcasts for the Big Hunt Guys podcast, and I just commandeered a neighboring office. So if you're watching on YouTube, it's not going to be visually too interesting. Unfortunately, I just got this plain gray wall behind me. But anyways, yeah, we're going to dive in. I'm going to do a solo episode this week. Basically, I want to cover something that's been on my mind. I recently was fortunate enough to draw a pronghorn antelope tag. I'm going to refer to it as antelope. Had those guys on from the Pronghorn Foundation, and super cool opportunity to talk to those guys. It's neat to see a foundation that is dedicated solely to conservation of North American pronghorn, because like I said, I think they're a super cool animal. But basically, I was able to pick up a antelope tag in Nevada on the second draw, which is a cool thing for me. I was a little bit bummed out that I didn't have an antelope tag for the year. I've talked about it pretty openly, but I really do love antelope hunting. I've had a lot of good antelope hunts, some that weren't so good. But basically, they're one of my very favorite species to hunt, and I look forward to those every year. So obviously, since I drew that tag, it's been on my mind a lot. I've been answering a lot of questions from guys that have drawn an archery antelope tag and are trying to pick my brain on how you might hunt from a blind. I like hunting from a blind. I've filled a decent number of questions about spot and stock, and then also decoying. And I think there's a bit of a science to pronghorn. They're a unique animal in that their senses, their strong suits, if you will, are different than some of the other species like mule deer or elk. Pronghorn, you know, obviously they will wind you, but I don't think that they rely on their nose nearly as much as an elk might or a mule deer might pick up on sound. Pronghorn really rely on their eyesight, and they've got 8-power vision, they say. They pick up movement extremely well. They live in extremely open terrain, and they're challenging. They're really challenging to hunt with a bow, especially if you're spotting stock or decoying. I like hunting them from a blind, so I'm going to talk quite a bit about blind hunting, and I do think that there are some things that you can do if you're hunting from a blind to help you increase your chances of success. One of my very favorite things to do is to find a buck. So scouting, covering country, I'll talk about e-scouting and scouting here in a sec, but I love finding a big mature antelope buck and really trying to figure that buck out. And I think one of the best opportunities that a person has to kill a big target buck with your bow is hunting from a blind. And I know I pretty openly say that, there's a bit of a stigma around hunting from a blind, which I don't entirely understand. I mean, to some extent I do. I just know that anytime somebody posts a picture of an antelope buck that they've taken, one of the first questions in the comment section is always, spot and stock. And I get that, because spot and stock archery antelope hunting is really tough. And if you've killed one spot and stock style, I feel like you've definitely achieved something, because I think you have to be super stealthy to actually get within range and execute a shot on those animals. But there seems to be a little bit of a stigma. I don't know exactly why. I'm going to talk a little bit about why I like hunting from a blind. It's actually one of my very favorite hunting styles. I like it for the downtime. I like the opportunity to kind of disconnect and sit and think and, spend time really running through my life, thinking about the things that are going on in my life. It just gives me an opportunity to do a lot of thinking, which I don't think that we often get day to day anymore. You just don't get time to yourself to sit and think and kind of process things. I also really like to read, so it's a good opportunity to sit. I always try to bring 3 or 4 books, and I probably do more reading in those days in an antelope blind than I do throughout the rest of the year. So for me, it's a really good opportunity to just disconnect, read, do some thinking, and then, hopefully kill a great buck. So I'm going to answer some questions that I get. I'm going to talk a little bit about hunting from a blind, how you set it up, some things that I've learned about hunting from a blind. I'll talk about some spot and stock. I haven't been super successful spot and stock antelope hunting. I've done a fair amount of it, but it's really challenging. But I do have some tips and tricks and some ideas I think might help you if you are, dedicated spot and stock antelope hunting. And then I'll probably talk a little bit about decoying. Again, I haven't had a ton of success decoying antelope. I've had some. So I wanted to talk about some of the things that I've learned maybe for decoying antelope. And I think all three of them are good opportunities, good methods to hunt antelope. It really just depends on the type of hunt you're looking for, you know, where you're going to hang your hat on in terms of success. You know, decoying is exciting for sure. If it works out, it could be really challenging, but obviously a really neat opportunity to harvest and hunt an animal that you may not get anywhere else. It's not like, you know, folks are typically out decoying, you know, big mule deer bucks during the archery hunt when they're going to come in like an antelope buck will. So before I dive in, get too far down the rabbit hole, I'm going to hit you guys with my promo. So you can use the promo code GAMETRAIL. That's GAMETRAIL. And you can sign up for a Go Hunt Insider account. Right now we have a promo going in at Go Hunt where if you sign up as a new member and you transfer your waypoints over into our mapping platform, and it's super easy. That's a common question we get. You know, can I actually transfer my waypoints? You know, I'm stuck with all my waypoints in a different platform. I don't want to lose them. You can completely transfer your waypoints over very quickly. It takes less than 2 minutes to do. You can do it on your phone. You can do it on a laptop. It's a really simple process. So we have this promo. You can use that code GAMETRAIL. You can sign up. And if you're a brand new member, you transfer your waypoints over. We're actually going to give you 100 points back into the Go Hunt Gear Shop. 100 points is $100 that you can use towards the purchase of any gear that you want in the shop. So pretty good deal. Good time of year to, you know, bank some points, get some points built up in the shop, and maybe purchase some new archery equipment. You know, decoys, we carry antelope decoys, those Montana decoys in our shop. And, you know, if you got an antelope tag, you should probably have one just so that if you have to throw the kitchen sink at a particular buck, you've got that in tow. Along with that promo, I did want to shout out Matthews. Matthews is a sponsor of the Game Trail Podcast. They make a great bow. You know, I can't say enough about them as a company, as a product. I've been tinkering around with mine a lot lately in the last month and a half or so, and I've got it shooting really, really well. Doing some paper tuning, some bear shaft tuning over the weekend, and it's absolutely shooting great. So I'm looking forward to this season. And with that antelope tag that I picked up, it's pretty crazy, but it actually starts August 1st. I was looking at the calendar. I'm probably going to be out here for a week coming up, going to Hawaii to actually hunt axis deer, which is another cool opportunity that I was blessed with, I should say. Some guys from Mountain Ops invited us to go on a hunt, so that's a neat opportunity. But that hunt, that antelope hunt I've got, I mean, it'll be essentially 2 weeks after I get back. So it's quickly approaching. It's here. It's hard to believe the hunting season's already upon us, but yeah, Matthews Bows, again, just appreciate those guys. So let me dive in. I'm going to talk a little bit about blind hunting before I get going into that portion of the podcast. I wanted to talk some scouting, some e-scouting. I've said it before. I actually probably said it earlier on. I had a conversation with Brady. We were talking about e-scouting. I'm not known for being a big e-scouter. I don't spend a ton of time e-scouting for elk. I do quite a bit for mule deer. Elk, I feel like I can figure out if I get out on the landscape and I've just got enough time. But pronghorn, I spend a lot of time e-scouting. And I think it's one of the species that gets me excited. And I think it's advantageous for me kind of at this stage where I'm at with hunting to do a lot of e-scouting. And so since I drew this permit, I've spent countless hours in the evening with my laptop open, just cruising the units. And I'm looking for primarily water. Antelope are a species that lives in an arid environment. It's really dry. It's really hot. They live out in those sage flats, those prairies, and water is a premium for them. They need to drink pretty much every single day. If there is a little bit of moisture, obviously they'll drink out of a puddle. If you got some rain and there's some water in the vegetation that they're consuming, they may not need to water as much, but for the most part, they're pretty reliant on water. I think antelope can drink about 3 liters of water a day. I think that they hit water most every single day. And that's why I spend all my time e-scouting, looking at water. So typically my process for e-scouting antelope, I like to open up my Go Hunt maps. I like to pull up the unit profiles. I like to overlay the private land and the public land because I want to know where those public lands are. The next layer I typically add in are your roads and trails layers. I want to know where the roads are. I want to know what roads are county roads that are accessible to me because I'm just doing it DIY public land style. And then beyond that, I like to use those water layers. So I'll turn on those water layers. And depending on the state that you're e-scouting, you know, it may pull in some guzzler information. Those guzzlers are water catchments that they build to collect water. They build those for wildlife. And if the state that you're hunting offers a layer that includes those are definitely worth looking at. You know, it doesn't typically, when you're looking at water layers, it's not going to pull in all those cattle troughs and ponds. That's where, you know, just sweat and blood is going to be required on your part, just staring at a map and countlessly just spending hours cruising around, panning, looking for water. There is a little trick that I use quite a bit when I'm looking for water and when I'm scouting for antelope. I kind of zoom out a little bit, just enough that I can see a pretty decent chunk of country, and I'll spend time panning those maps and looking for what I call wagon wheels. So what I'm looking for is I'm looking for cattle trails typically. So a lot of these public lands are also leased by cattle grazers out on the landscape. And those cattle are going to trail to water, and they'll typically pan out across the landscape. And, you know, they'll, over time, they will make these trails to those water holes. And as you're cruising the maps and looking, it'll often look like a big wagon wheel. So the spokes in the wagon wheel are those cattle trails to those ponds. So I spend a lot of time looking for those. After I find water catchments, ponds, it might be metal tanks, it might be just dirt stock tanks, I'll drop a pin on those. I like to highlight those in blue just to identify the water so that as I zoom out across the map, I can actually get a lay of the landscape and I can see where the water holes are. Another thing in regards to e-scouting I do with antelope is I like to pull up Google Earth and I like to compare the historical imagery along with our historical imagery that we have in our maps. Google Earth is really good about collecting good historical aerial images. And the reason I do that is because I want to be able to go back in time over the years and evaluate the likelihood of each individual water hole that I'm considering. And see if it'll probably, you know, have water. If I can find multiple years where I've got green vegetation around it, I've got some, you know, a lot of times you can actually see the water in those catchments. If I can find that water, I know that year over year, I know that it's a high likelihood that I'm actually going to be able to arrive out there on the landscape and find water. So that's kind of my e-scouting process. You know, before my hunt starts, one of the first things I like to do is I like to cruise those roads and trails, and I like to go out and visit each individual water catchment that I've labeled on my map. And as I approach those water holes, I'm typically scanning the landscape, but I'm looking for antelope. Antelope are pretty habitual, I would say. They don't normally, during that time of year, August, September, maybe even into October, I don't think that they range widely. Tend to hold a pretty decent home range, and it's almost always centered around a water catchment or water hole where they can get water every day. So as I'm visiting those, I'm looking for antelope, and I'm taking note of what antelope I see. You know, if I see a buck, I'm definitely getting some digiscope footage of it so I can evaluate, see what I'm looking at. I like to drive up to each individual water hole, get out, take a walk around it. I'm looking for tracks. I'm looking for scat. I'm just looking for signs of antelope. And I'm also looking for trails that are coming into those water holes. I'm looking for tracks on those trails because I want to get a good idea on where the most likely approach area is. So that's going to help me in kind of being able to dictate where I might place my blind. You know, another common question I get in regards to water holes, and like I said, I'm going to dip into blind hunting here in a sec, but I get asked quite a bit, what is the most typical time that a buck will come in to water? And I would say time of year, you know, pray for dry, hot weather. you know, hot weather, dry conditions are really conducive to bringing antelope to water holes. If you get some thunderstorms and you get some rain, it can be really tough on water because those little, any little catchment, any, you know, hoof print, tire track, you know, burrow or ditch or anything like that that'll hold any water for a few days will definitely pull antelope off of your main water hole, and they'll water at those little areas. So, you know, hot, dry weather is conducive. You know, August, most of those archery antelope hunts open up in August. So early August, I would say, to maybe mid-September is really your best opportunity to hunt off of a water hole and find some success. Times of day. So I've had antelope come in right at first light. Essentially, you know, it'll get light and, you know, those antelope will be out on their feet feeding across the landscape. I've had them hit water, you know, as early as maybe 45 minutes to an hour after light. I've had antelope come in at 10:30, 11 in the morning. I've had antelope come in at 1:32 in the afternoon. That seems to be, to me, like the primary time frame. It does seem to me like there's a bit of a lull where I don't get a lot of action on a water hole, maybe like 3 to 5, 6 o'clock, something like that. But then those evening hours, maybe 45 minutes to an hour before legal shooting light disappears, I've had antelope come in there that time frame fairly often. So it's hard to say that there's like one more time of day that's more productive. I would say I've shot more antelope off of water between 11 and 2 than anything. Those hot part of the day where those bucks might get up and decide to wander over to a water hole, I would say that's kind of prime time, but it's not unheard of, like I said, to have them come in the morning or, you know, in the evening. I like to sit all day, and I know it's challenging in its own right. Like I said, you're sitting there with your thoughts the entire day, and with the limited visibility of those blinds, it's not like you have giant landscapes to really spend a lot of time looking out and kind of distracting yourself. It can be really challenging to sit in a blind all day. It's also really hot. I've shot bucks where daytime temperatures outside of the blind were in the high 90s. Biggest buck I ever shot, actually, I shot, it was 98 degrees outside. So inside that blind, I don't know what it was, maybe 105. It was really hot. So that in itself is really challenging, and you kind of prepare for it and, you know, be mentally prepared to just sit the whole day. But I really do like to sit the whole day. I think it's the best way to, you know, get a crack at your target buck. So let's dive into water hole or tank selection. Typically, I will prioritize smaller tanks over big, large ponds. Primary reason is because if you get a big, large expanse of water, there's a really good chance that they will come in, but they will keep their distance to a point of where you may not be able to shoot. I have hunted water holes where, you know, picking the right path, the right trail, has been paramount to actually harvesting a buck that's coming into a larger water hole. But generally speaking, I'm looking for small water holes, relatively small, you know, not too big. I do like open water. I had an interesting experience last year. I shot a buck off of water, and the water source I had set my blind up on was, there were two holes actually. So there was one that was a dirt tank open, you know, complete dirt, and then maybe 20 yards from it, 20 to 30, there was a big open metal stock tank. And when I set my blind up, I kind of set it up in between the two of them, but I was actually a lot closer to the dirt tank than I was the open galvanized metal tank. And I really kind of wanted to do a little bit of experiment to see what would happen, because I've been told, I've heard, that animals generally like dirt tanks. And I don't know if it's the sediment in those. I don't know if they just feel more secure coming in because maybe they can see a little bit better. Maybe those big metal tanks, maybe they can't quite see to the other side of it, and, you know, it makes them nervous. But I wanted to test it, and I had a lot of antelope coming that morning, probably 25 or 30. And it was interesting. I would say the bulk of them, I can only remember one small buck that went to the metal tank. Almost every other antelope went to the open dirt tank, which, like I said, was a lot closer to me in the blind. But even with that, they came to that dirt tank. So I like dirt tanks. It's not to say that they won't drink out of a metal tank. I've shot antelope off of metal tanks. But given the choice, I think those open dirt tanks are preferred. So I look for those. Like I said, I'm always looking for tracks when I'm picking a water hole. They like clean water if you can get it. I've seen them drink out of some tanks that I thought, man, there's no way an animal's going to drink out of that. But I've certainly seen it, so it's not, you know, completely out of the realm. But I think open, clean water, if you got a windmill or a solar pump, something like that, that's pumping water into that, they definitely seem to like those. They like that clean water, and they like those dirt tanks. So setting a blind, I get asked quite a bit, how early should you set your blind up? You know, do they avoid a water hole? You know, if you got a blind set up and they don't have time to get used to it. So on average, I would say most of the advice that I've received is that you ought to set it early, maybe 3 to 5 days before hunting that blind so that those antelope get used to it. You know, people say that you should brush your blind in, and I've done that and I felt like it's been successful. I can tell you I've also shot antelope off of water holes where I literally put the blind up the night before in the dark. I try not to set my blind up during the daylight hours. If there's antelope in close proximity, I typically don't like to go and, you know, set my blind up while they're standing out there kind of watching. I like to set it up at night. I like to set it up in the dark. And I think if you can set your blind up early, it's advantageous because obviously it gives an opportunity to get used to it. But I wouldn't be afraid at all if I found a water hole that I wanted to hunt to, you know, go out there in the middle of the night before I plan on hunting it, and actually just popping up my blind. Brushing your blind in. So a lot of antelope areas, it may not even be feasible to brush your blind in. There may not be a lot of cover whatsoever. There may not be any sage or, you know, grass or anything that you can use to brush your blind in. If you can, I do think it's a good idea. I remember shooting a buck in Utah, my biggest buck actually, which is an interesting story. I found this buck, and I watched him from a distance, probably close to a mile. I watched him come into this tank, and it was a windmill tank, so it was pumping fresh water into it. It was inside of a enclosure, kind of a corral. With two sides being open, so they had access, which was kind of handy because I knew that they would have had to come in one way or the other. But within that little area, and I say little, it wasn't little by any means, it was a pretty good sized corral, but within that area, there was a bunch of that standing weed. So it was probably, you know, 4 to 5 feet tall. And when I put that blind up, I took some time to cut some of it back behind it and really brush that blind in. And I do feel like in that instance, it was, you know, a benefit to me. I felt like those antelope came in. I felt like they were a lot more relaxed. It felt like it didn't deter them whatsoever. I have set up blinds on water holes where I really didn't have any cover whatsoever. I didn't have any vegetation to really brush it in other than maybe some, you know, some grass or something that I might stick in it just to break up maybe the baseline of the blind. Maybe a little bit in the top part of it, but not really much at all. And I've still had antelope come in and I've still killed antelope. But I would say if you do have the means to brush it in somewhat, you should. Blind placement, I think, is really important. Distance, you know, people have said, you know, the further away from the water source, the more comfortable they'll be, which in theory it makes sense. But in my mind, I'm trying to make the most ethical, you know, lethal shot that I can. So I typically place mine somewhere in the neighborhood of 25 to 35 yards. I don't really want to put my blind out past 40 because, you know, they are skittish animals. They can duck a string for sure. So I like to set my blind, you know, close enough that it's a shot I can make 10 out of 10 times. You know, I wouldn't put it at 10 yards or 15 yards if you can help it. But I think in that 25 to maybe 35 yard window is kind of the best option as far as distance goes. Placing the blind. So what I like to do when I place my blind is I like to set it where the sun is going to come up at my back. So, and that's in the morning, right? So it's going to come up to the east. So I like to kind of situate my blind, almost triangulate it at the water hole, if that makes sense. And the reason I like to do that is because I like to be able to tuck myself into the very back corner of that blind where it's the darkest portion of the blind. I like to put it where the sun comes up behind me so that I am in the shade for the bulk of the day. You know, when you get into those evening hours, maybe before the sun sets, you might get some sunlight coming in the one window, but that's one of the reasons I like to set it up almost kitty corner, if you will, so that I can sit in that back corner and I can really conceal myself in the deepest, darkest part of that blind. One of the things that's going to potentially bust you is movement. So they're not going to put up with any movement. So if they come in and, you know, you have to move a little bit into the sunlight to get a look at them or to draw your bow, if you get any sunlight on you where that movement is going to be picked up by those animals, they're going to pick you off and they're not going to hang out. Movement is the key. You gotta stay high and tight. You gotta sit real, real still when those animals come in, because they do pick up on movement so well. You know, inside my blind, I do wear, you know, completely black. Hopefully the blind that you've got is completely blacked out on the interior portion of it. So I wear a black lightweight long sleeve sun shirt. I usually wear black shorts. You know, my typical footwear for hunting out of a blind, just a pair of tennis shoes, just running shoes. I like to try to keep it as cool as I possibly can, but black is really important to wear because you do want to try to blend in with the back outline of your blind. You know, you're going to be sitting for a long time, like I said, probably 10 hours potentially. So comfort is a premium. You want to make sure that you have a comfortable chair. You know, I've sat a lot of hours in an antelope blind where I just sat in a regular old camp chair, which was not comfortable. They do make some really cool swivel, like 360 swivel chairs that will allow you to pivot and move. You are going to be shooting from a sitting position most likely. So those chairs are great if you can find them. What I've ended up using that's been really good for me is I went down to my local cow ranch and I just bought one of these fold-out chairs. It's like a camp chair, but it's a kind of beefier, bigger, better version of a camp chair. The platform actually folds out flat, so it's comfortable. It's got a back, it's got armrests. The one side actually has a bit of a shelf that pops up and folds out, and I like that because I can lay my rangefinder, I can lay my books, you know, I can lay my release next to me, and I can get to it with very minimal movement and super quiet. So that's the chair that I've used. I do, when I first get into my blind and I get it set up, I like to make sure that my blind is situated correctly so that I can draw my bow. I've got enough distance that I can actually draw. I've definitely seen people, you know, get in their blind, try to come to full draw, and they find out that their arrow is, you know, brushing up against the inside of the blind and, you know, pops it off their rest or makes that scratch noise as it goes up the side. I've seen people, myself included, I've got into a blind and found out that my front stabilizer was too long to be able to draw and shoot. And so you want to test all that. You may need to shoot a shorter stabilizer when you're hunting out of a blind. If my archery, elk, or deer setup is I'm using a 15-inch front bar and a 12-inch back bar, you know, when I go antelope hunting out of a blind, I'm going to need to shorten that up. So I may only end up shooting that front stabilizer at like 4 or 5 inches. And that's one of the great things I like about that bridge lock stabilizer is I can actually open that thing up and slide those weights all the way back. You're going to want to practice out of a blind. I remember the first time I ever shot an arrow out of a blind. I was completely shocked. I thought I just dry fired my bow because it's so loud. It holds that sound within that blind, and it's kind of alarming when it goes off because it's so much more loud than it is when you're just up at the range shooting, or if you're out shooting, you know, at an elk or a deer. So you want to practice with it. You want to get used to it. You want to know what it sounds like, what it feels like. You're going to be shooting, like I said, from a sitting position. I have shot bucks from kneeling positions inside a blind because that's what it required. But both of those shots are shots that you need to practice. Typically people, myself, I shoot low if I'm shooting from a sitting position or a kneeling position. It seems like that pin wants to dip out the bottom more so than if I'm standing up and I can use my core to kind of stabilize myself and shoot. So you want to practice shooting from those positions, sitting, kneeling, you know, get comfortable with drawing your bow. You know, it's harder to draw your bow when you're sitting or kneeling than it is if you're just standing up at the range. So you want to make sure that your poundage is set where you can very smoothly, very quietly come to full draw, settle in, anchor, and actually execute a shot. Another little tip for hunting out of a blind, you want to make sure that the windows that you plan on shooting out of are adequately open, that you've got enough space. I will admit I have shot through a blind, the lower portion of a blind, came to full draw, anchored in. I was so focused on shooting this buck, I hadn't taken precaution and really looked at the path of my arrow. Obviously, the arrow is lower than my eye. And, you know, anchored in on this buck, executed a shot, and I shot that broadhead right through a hunk of the blind. So the bottom window wasn't lowered sufficiently to actually give me arrow clearance, which was a real heartbreaker. I ended up killing that buck later, but that was a shot opportunity that I messed up just by not taking precautions to make sure that I had enough clearance for my arrow. So you want to be aware of that. Another thing that I like to do, if you've got the time, is I like to take markers. So I might take four or five large rocks, and I will set them out at various distances from that water hole. And those are visual markers of yardage. So as I'm watching a buck come in a lot of cases, I'm watching him walk through or past these rocks, and I don't have to pick up my range finder and range that animal because I've got visual markers and I've pre-ranged them so I know exactly how far that animal is as he's approaching. When they get into water, you should have ranged those distances so many times that they're just burned into your psyche. You know absolutely that the yardage is set so that you don't have to pick up your rangefinder and actually range the animal. You should have enough pre-work done that before you execute a shot, you know the exact yardage. You've got all day to do that. And like I said, that little tip of setting markers out there and, you know, watching those animals come in and come past them has been really helpful to me. When you're shooting at a buck out of a blind, I would say the most common mistake is just rushing it. A lot of times those antelope will come in, they're really alert, they're looking for any kind of movement. Obviously the blind is going to look foreign to them. They may not know that you're in there, but they definitely know that something isn't quite right. So they're going to be cagey. They're going to be on alert, and it might take them a fair amount of time to actually commit and come in close enough to offer you a shot. My advice would be don't rush the shot. Don't push your luck. Give those animals time. Let them relax. Let them get used to the blind. In a lot of cases, they will go out and they will pace. You know, they'll kind of work back and forth on the horizon, and they'll kind of, you know, eye out, check things out. You know, they're looking for movement. They're looking for any kind of disturbance that might alarm them to your presence. And so, you know, don't rush anything. You might have a buck stand out there at 60 or 80 yards. 60 yards might be within your effective shooting distance, but 25 is a whole lot more of a sure thing when you're shooting out of a blind. So don't rush it. Let them commit. Let them come in. Don't rush the shot. A lot of times, and this is a little tip that I've picked up over the years, is those bucks come in, a lot of the time they will come to the water hole, they'll look at the blind, they'll stand there, they'll kind of assess the situation, and they will go to put their head to water, like they're going to water. And in those cases, many times I've messed up thinking, okay, this is my window, I'm going to actually draw my bow and execute a shot. And what ends up happening is they kind of almost pump fake you. So they'll like put their head to the water, and then they'll pop their head up and they will look at you or look at the blind just to try to bait you in, is what I feel like, to any kind of movement to alert them to your presence. So watch for that pump fake. My advice is let them start drinking. So what I do is I let them come in, I let them get comfortable, I let them get to the water. They're going to drink for a minute. I mean, if they're going to consume three liters of water, they're going to spend some time at that water hole actually after they start drinking. So what I like to do is remain completely motionless, just stay completely undetected. Don't draw my bow, don't make any movement. And I just like to wait and I like to wait for those bucks to actually start drinking. So once they start drinking, and a lot of times you'll actually be able to hear them, you know, it's quiet on that prairie. You'll actually be able to hear them starting to intake water and slurping. For me, that's the point. I wait to that point. And many times I've actually been able to draw my bow while they're drinking, you know, before they've even picked their head up and looked. But that's really the key for me. I don't want to commit to anything. I don't want to make any movement before they actually end up start drinking. You know, I've already kind of mentioned a few other things. Another question I get about using decoys at a water hole, you know, should I use a decoy? I typically don't think that using decoys at a water hole is a great idea. There's maybe that time frame when those bucks are in the rut. You might lure a buck in, you know, come in a little bit quicker. But in my opinion, they need water. And I think the decoy on water, I think it has the potential to just alarm them, make them more nervous, if you will. So I don't like to use a decoy at water holes. I think decoying's fine if they're rutting and actually trying to work in on them and trying to get a buck to charge in on you. But I don't think that using a decoy on a water hole is advantageous. I would rather just wait for those animals to come into water and be a little bit more relaxed. So those are kind of my tips. Hopefully those help out. You know, I always try to get to my blind early. So I want to be there a half hour at least before sunlight. I like to settle in, you know, get into my blind super quiet, be in there well before light in the dark. And I like to park my vehicle a good distance away from my blind. Sometimes I've parked it in a depression in the landscape just to try to get my vehicle below their line of sight. I like to have a good idea where they're coming in. You know, when you get in your blind and you've kind of assessed the whole situation, you know, you can pick your windows. I usually only open one window. Sometimes I'll open two if it looks like I can do that and sit in that back corner without actually exposing myself into the sunlight where they could pick up movement. But a lot of times I'll only open one, you know, one window. Hopefully you've got enough field of view that you can actually execute a shot when they do come in out of that one window. But like I said, you want to be really careful about opening too many windows, letting too much light inside your blind, because they will pick you up. They'll pick up that movement. I have not worn a face mask. So people have asked me that, do you wear a black face mask? I have not. I've been successful. Mostly for me, it's about just concealing myself in those shadows. I wear black clothes. I haven't worn a face mask, and really trying to, mostly I just try to keep my movement at a bare minimum, like next to none. It's really important that you sit really still in your blind. You know, certainly during the day, you might have to get up, stretch the legs a little bit. I always like to take a peek around my blind to make sure that there's nothing coming in before I stand up. But, you know, stand up, stretch your legs a little bit if you have to. But a lot of that time in my blind, I'm sitting as still as I possibly can. I don't know how many times I couldn't count, to be honest, where I was just sitting completely unexpected. And I've had antelope literally appear, you know, right in front of me or at the horizon. You know, they pop up over the top and they're coming. So staying still as you can, you know, for the bulk of the day, I think is paramount. People have asked me, what do you do if you got to use the bathroom? Well, I pack bottles. So if I got to pee in a bottle, you know, I'll do it during the blind. If you got to do something else, then, you know, you're going to have to make arrangements. Maybe you got to climb out of the blind and find a spot to kind of get below line of sight, you know, get away from the blind and do your thing. But, you know, I pee in a bottle when I'm in a blind. I'm in there for the day. I'm in there for the whole day. I'm there to sit. I'm there to hunt and hopefully have antelope come in. What other questions do I get about blinds or blind hunting? I think that probably covers the bulk of it. Certainly, you know, if you guys got other questions, you can reach out to me if it's something I didn't really talk about. You know, hopefully that'll help you guys out and be a little bit more successful in hunting from a blind. Next up, I want to talk a little bit about spot and stock hunting. Just maybe give you some ideas and some pointers that might help you out. Typically, if I'm spot and stock hunting, I'm glassing early. You know, glass is really critical to spotting antelope. So I'm running roads and, you know, I'm using a tripod. I'm using binoculars. One of my very favorite binoculars for antelope hunting is a pair of Swarovski SLC 15x56s. Gives you that extra zoom. It's a super bright binocular, which is a lot of light, and you can pick those antelope up from a far distance. Bedded bucks and herds are, you know, bedded is preferable. You know, obviously, you know, any spot and stock animal, if you can find them bedded, your chances go up. It's really hard to hunt spot and stock style antelope that are up on their feet feeding, especially if they've got does. If you can find a buck alone or on the edge of a herd, it's a lot better opportunity for you. You know, I'm thinking specifically right now as I'm talking about a buck that I hunted in New Mexico a number of years ago. That buck had 14 does, 14 to 16 does, depending on the day. But that buck, I called him Waldo because every day I would get up in the morning, I would, you know, be out there before light and I would start cruising country and I would start glassing for that buck. And it was just like, where's Waldo today? And that buck, we played chess essentially for about 10 days. I was within range of that buck, I want to say 4 or 5 times. I never actually got to full draw on that buck because he was just so hard to get close to and actually get my bow drawn with all the eyes that he had around him. So all those does. Sometimes that's just the case. That's just the way that it is. Maybe your target buck is with a bunch of does, but certainly you can be more strategic about when you go and stalk that buck. You might have to wait till midday that afternoon, those afternoon hours, maybe, you know, 3 to 5, something like that, where that buck is actually bedded. You may have to wait days and days and days before he puts himself on the exterior edge of his herd so that you can actually stalk in and get close to him and get a stalk. Preferably, the best bucks to stalk are lone bucks, obviously. So if you find a buck and he's alone, that's a better opportunity than a buck that's already herded up with a bunch of does. But if they do have does, you're going to have to be really picky about when you actually choose to make a stalk. Now antelope are, like I said, they're habitual, right? So you can blow stalks on bucks and it's not like they're going to leave the entire country with your bow and arrow. It's like that buck Waldo that I hunted in New Mexico I was just telling you about. You can pretty much find those bucks day in and day out. So I wouldn't worry too much about attempting stalks because you're going to blow some stalks. I want to say it's probably 90-95+% that it's not going to work out on that stalk. You're going to have a lot of reps on him, but don't be afraid to make stalks, but certainly some stalks are worth making and some may not be. When you're stalking in antelope country, it's really open country. And I think when we hunt mule deer, or if we spot and stalk elk, for example, and under the right circumstances, I think we're used to having cover. We're used to having a lot of topography normally, you know, vegetation. We're able to use those to our advantage to close the distance on those types of animals. And I think we look at those landscapes, you know, differently. When you get out on the open range and you're hunting antelope, you almost have to change your mind. You have to have a mind shift change, almost like you've got to look at that topography differently, almost like at a macro level, maybe micro level. I don't know which. It's been a long day. But point being, you have to look at it on a different scale. So you've got to be looking for things like cattle trails or wash bottoms or, you know, sagebrush shadows or erosion cuts, you know, elevation that's different by a mere foot or two versus, you know, what we're used to if we're stalking mule deer. When you're looking at that open prairie, you're really looking at any type of cover and your overall profile is going to have to be much lower. You're going to have to get down real close to the ground. You're probably going to end up spending a lot of time belly crawling, crawling on your hands and knees. I remember a buck that I stalked in Wyoming a number of years ago. It took me probably 4.5-5 hours to belly crawl within 100 yards of this buck. And I was closing in, and I think I got within about 80, and it was just the time of day. But that buck got up and set away from me, and I couldn't keep up with him. But I was able to cut that distance, and I could have cut it further had he stayed put. But really, you've got to think about keeping a really, really low profile and also using micro changes in the topography or the vegetation to exploit. Shade is not readily available when you're stalking pronghorn. But if you do have some, if you've got a cut bank, if you've got some sagebrush even that's offering a little bit of shade, think about using that shade as you're crawling and you're stalking, because that open sunlight on your body as you're kind of moving, they're going to pick up that movement a lot more easier. So think about micro terrain, micro cover, think about shade, you know, avoid sudden movements. You've got to be very, very deliberate in your approach. I already kind of mentioned, but I think midday is probably the best opportunity that you've got to spot and stalk. You do have to pay attention to the wind. Antelope, like I said, their primary source of evading predation is not probably their nose, but it's not like they're going to use it. So if they get your wind directly, they're going to run off. Primarily their eyesight. You do have to be, you know, conscientious of the wind though as well. So if you've got a circle to get the wind in your favor, it's worth doing. You know, if you get a buck that's bedded, it's just like any other animal spot and stalk. You're better off if you're coming in from behind him. They do have a much wider field of view because of the way that their eyes are set within their eye socket. They can see, I want to say, like 320 degrees. So they have a wide, wide field of view. But even still, your best chances are when those bucks are bedded and if they're directly bedded away from you. And then, like I said, you just got to be really, really, really deliberate. I can't express that enough. You have to be very calm, very deliberate, very slow in your movement. They are a curious animal at times. I have had bucks that have stood up during a stalk, you know, busted me and actually came in much closer to inspect me. And at those times, you just got to stay completely still. You got to just stay put, stay low, and just try to do everything you can to hopefully stay undetected. And then, you know, hope that he comes in and actually offers you a shot. Another little tip I would say when you're hunting antelope, this is particularly challenging. It can be hard to actually maintain sight of the animal or actually know exactly where it's at because so much of that terrain looks exactly the same. Before you leave on a stalk, I always think it's a good idea to take a picture, drop, you know, a little dot or something on that picture so you know exactly where that antelope is. I think if you can use your maps, your Google Maps to drop a pin, if you can use, you know, a landmark to drop it nearby, but try to drop a mark as close to that animal of where he actually exists on the landscape. And then as you're stalking and you're cutting that country and you're really being deliberate, you're crawling, you're getting in there tight, you know, pay really close attention to landmarks and where they are in relation to that animal. I can think of a number of times where I have, you know, picked out a distant horizon, a notch in a hillside or a cliff or something way out in the distance that I could use as a reference point to where that buck actually is as you're creeping in and crawling on them. And I found that really helpful. So those are kind of my tips and tricks for spotting stalk. Like I said, you know, it's tough. It's really, really hard. And there are definitely antelope in areas that are almost unstalkable because it's so flat. There's no cover. I would say if your goal is to spot and stalk and kill an antelope buck, you may have to do some shopping for the type of terrain that's conducive to spot and stalk hunting. You may find bucks, you may find a target buck even, you may not be able to kill just because you don't have the topography, the cover to actually close the distance. It doesn't mean that it's not worth trying. I'm just saying it can be really, really tough. Okay, let's dive into decoying. So decoying typically works best between late August and early September. That's when those bucks are most likely to be rutting. They will have rounded up does. They will be acting more territorial. I like the 2D, the pop-up decoys because they're easy to store in your backpack and you can just pop those up. So Montana decoy makes a great one. I would say don't overuse decoys. especially if the bucks are not rutting. So that early August time frame, maybe those bucks aren't really rutting. I would say don't overuse them. Don't use decoys because it typically just scares them off. They'll see that buck and take off. There really is kind of a peak time, and it's usually when those bucks are rutting and they're territorial. Posturing. So there gets to be a time frame, and really when I'm kind of evaluating a buck on whether or not a decoy may work, I'm kind of looking for behaviors in that antelope as I'm glassing them. So I'm looking for territorial behavior. I'm looking for those herd bucks to be posturing, you know, working his herd. In a lot of cases, if you sit long enough and you watch those herds, you'll actually see a buck that's in full rut run off other bucks as they kind of come in and start to mess with his harem. So before I pop up a decoy, a lot of the times I'm spending, hours watching those herds, and I'm watching for behavior. I'm evaluating where they're at. I'm looking for the topography. I'm kind of trying to get an idea on where they might be headed. And I'm looking for areas where I might be able to utilize that decoy. And I'm looking mostly for that behavior. I want to know that that buck is feeling really ruddy and that he is, actively chasing other antelope. Lone bucks. Obviously, if you find a lone buck that's out cruising and looking for does and he's kind of acting territorial, maybe you'll see him running off another buck. That's a great target to potentially decoy. Bucks that have small harems, so maybe two or three versus, 14 or 15, like this Waldo buck that I was hunting, those are better options because there's obviously just less eyes. Bucks typically won't approach if they've got too many does to kind of work around, or if they are preoccupied with another buck. So be aware of that. If they're being pushed hard already by another one, they may not come and check you out. It just depends. A lot of this is just evaluating behavior and looking for, behavior and really trying to evaluate the best area. My opinion, the best way to approach decoying is to get decently close to them, and I'm talking maybe 200 to 400 yards if you can. If you can use the topography to your advantage to cut that distance to that buck before you actually pop up the decoy, I think you have a much better chance. So if you can find a hillside, a creek bottom or a wash, whatever cover that you might be able to find to actually cut the distance within that 200 to 400 yards before you present them the decoy, I think it's a good idea. I think you get a better opportunity. It seems like they get a little bit more wound up and, territorial. If all of a sudden they see a buck and he's, 200 yards from him, they start to think, hey, this other buck's in here to challenge me for my does. So, think about the wind also. I already kind of mentioned that on spot and stock, but you definitely have to pay attention to the wind when you present the decoy. Use what cover you got. I don't think that cluttered backdrops are good for decoying. So if you got a lot of vegetation, if you're against a hillside, if you will, and you're kind of in the shade, it may not be the best opportunity to decoy. You want that buck to actually see the decoy. So ideally for me, the best situation would be, I've got a buck, he's kind of out in a flat. I've got some cover, a hillside that I can crawl up to, I pop up there on the top, and I can present my decoy. Maybe I'm within 300 yards and it's kind of silhouetted on the skyline, and then, pop it up, set it up, get ready to go. And then I like to actually, if I can, back up off that a little bit, not a ton, but a little bit. I think when you're decoying, the things that most often get you busted are too much movement. So if you got too much movement behind the decoy, if you're like moving around trying to get it set up, or if you're hunting with a buddy and there's two of you and you're trying to crawl up and one person's trying to set that decoy up, the other person's with the bow, just any kind of excessive movement behind that decoy, I think, can get you busted. I think them not seeing it is obviously a problem, so you didn't pick the right spot. And then I think being too far away, antelope they cover a lot of ground, so it's not like they can't come and check you out, but I typically think that they're not as willing to commit and come into you if you're too far removed from them. I do feel like, just like an elk, I feel like there's that zone, maybe it's 100 yards for elk or whatever it is. It's like if they hear a bugle and you're right on top of them, you know, they're a lot more interested to come in and challenge a challenge bugle. I think an antelope's the same way. I think if, you know, he sees a threat and you're in tight, I think he's a lot more likely to come and check that decoy out. Obviously, you know, shooting from behind a decoy, it's going to be quick. Those bucks will run right in. You know, you've got to be willing and able to draw your bow smoothly without being detected. And you have to be pretty proficient at quickly executing a shot. They're not going to give you a ton of time in most cases. Ranging that animal is going to be tough. You want to try to get a range if you can. But if there are markers, bushes, rocks, trees, whatever it might be that you can pre-range before that buck actually commits and start to come in, I would do that. I would also, I think it would be advantageous for you to do a lot of estimating. So, you know, estimating yardages. So when you're practicing at the local range, you know, estimate ranges, you know, throw your block target down a hill, estimate it, you know, put your block down, walk out to a distance, estimate that range, shoot a shot, you know, then range it. It can be really a major benefit to you if you're good at estimating distances. And it's hard. Antelope hunting specifically, because that country is so open that it can be really tough to size up that animal on that landscape. Distances are super deceiving. So practice it. I think that's the best way to do it. You know, that's kind of decoying in a nutshell. Like I said, I'm sure there's a lot of you that love decoying. You probably have some tips that you could give me. I'd love to hear them if you got them. Same with spot and stock antelope hunting. If you guys think there's something that I missed, I would love to hear it. Lastly, I'm going to touch on kind of some mental side of antelope hunting. Mental game and patience is everything. You know, 99% of the stalks that you take with your bow and arrow on an antelope are going to fail. You know, most of the attempts that you make with a decoy are going to result in that buck turning tail and running the other direction as fast as they possibly can. So I think going into it with the expectation that you're going to have to work pretty hard, you're going to have to make a lot of stalks to actually execute and kill a buck. You're probably going to end up having to use a decoy hundreds of times before you actually get one buck to commit and come in. So going into it with that mindset, you know, you're going to fail most of the time. Don't let it discourage you. Don't let it beat you down. Don't quit. Just keep at it. Stay persistent. You know, blind hunting, same thing. It just takes a lot of patience, a lot of persistence. You know, make sure that you've got snacks in your blind if you're blind hunting. You know, make sure that you've got water, you've got food, you've got a good book to read. You know, make sure that you've got ways to occupy your time in there so that mentally, like, you're in it. You're going to stay there no matter how hot it gets or how boring it gets. You know, be mentally prepared to sit and stay. I killed a buck in Nevada a number of years ago. I drew a permit, and I sat, I want to say, 6 days from dark to dark. In that entire time, I had one doe and a fawn come in, and then I had the buck that I killed came in with about 12 does, and that was the sixth day, I believe. And it seemed impossible. It seemed like this, I'm wasting my time. I don't know how many times I was sitting in the blind and just thinking, man, I'm probably wasting my time out here. I just don't know that this is going to happen. But yeah, stay persistent, stay in it, and find ways, find coping mechanisms if you can to stay in it and stay engaged. If that's a book, if it's a video game, if it's Tetris, whatever it might be, figure out what it is for you that's going to help you stay engaged and stay with it. Don't rush the shot. You know, don't push the envelope on a buck, especially if you're hunting in a blind. You know, let them commit, let them get comfortable, let them come in, let them start to drink. Be calculated in the way that you draw your bow. Practice it. You know everything that you're going to do up until that moment to where you actually execute that shot so that it's just absolutely dialed and ready to go. Use your rangefinder consistently, you know, and just stay at it. So with that, that's kind of my tips and tricks for archery antelope hunting. I'm really excited about it. I look forward to antelope hunts. They're fun. They're really, really fun. Certainly got some bad memories associated with some antelope hunts. I've got some really good memories associated with it, but I do love antelope. I love that species. It's one of my very favorites to hunt, so I'm really looking forward to it here in just a few short weeks. So with that, that's a wrap on this week's podcast. I'll be back next week, and good luck to you guys out there. Get out, you know, super tune your bows, shoot your broadheads, arrows every day, shoot arrows every day, so that when the time arrives, when it's crunch time, that you got that muscle memory. It's dialed into you, and you can execute a shot. And that's what I'm trying to do this time of year. So with that, that's it for the week, and I'll be back next week.